Hello, welcome to our interview today. So today we're very, very lucky to be joined by a good friend and colleague, Richard Stevenson. So Richard is not a pharmacist, which is absolutely brilliant. I think we need more non-pharmacists in pharmacy to shake things up a bit. But Richard has been with the Right Medicine Pharmacy up in Scotland, who now have 37 branches. Is that right, Richard?
35.
I just added two.
Yeah, maybe you know something I don't know, Johnny.
Maybe. But basically, Richard, I'll let him introduce himself in a minute. But Richard's been with Right Medicine, I believe, for 12 years. So he's in his 13th year. So why don't we start, Richard, by you just sort of describing, I guess, how did you get to here? What have you done through your career, and what's led you to chatting to me today?
There's a lot to cover there, Johnny. But listen, my route to pharmacy, as you said, I'm not a pharmacist. And every time I have conversations with people, it's usually my opening sentence is just to let you know I'm not a pharmacist. But I think once you're ingrained in this business and industry, you tend to talk the talk a little bit, and it can be quite easy to fall into it. My background, I mean, leaving school, I left high school, didn't go to university, opted to sort of go out, start working, get stuck in. And retail was my sort of starting point and really the sort of first part of my career, progressing very, very quickly through discount retailing into management. And then wanted a change. Went in to be a sales rep, and I'll not plug them too much, but I went into working for a company called Farris Slacks, which okay. A lot of people will know of because their dads or granddads used to wear them. And it was a big change for me, but did that, made redundant when things sort of changed in the market, ended up working for Procter & Gamble in category management, which led to my route into Right Medicine back in 2010. Again, was made redundant and offered the opportunity to come in and join a forward-thinking pharmacy group at that stage, about 10 pharmacies. And over that sort of, as you say, the 12 into 13 years, I have just saw, I can't even think how it's managed to get to where it is today and the things that I do, but I love pharmacy. And I think that's probably what's kept me going through the good, the bad, the ugly, and probably currently going back into repeat on that a little bit. But I love everything about it. I think just because there's still so much opportunity out there.
Yeah, it's tough out there. We'll come on to that later on. So you must have you'll have started with Johnny B MBE, of course. I have to mention that every time I speak to him, he reminds me he's got an MBE. And Noel Wicks, of course, is the other founding member, and Mike as well. Mike Embry. So yeah, no, that's interesting. So given that you're not a pharmacist, I must admit I rarely speak to non-pharmacists on this podcast, but I thought for a while that community pharmacy particularly, and this sort of echoes what I was saying in my rambling rant at the pharmacy show. It started off one way, then I just started ranting. But yeah, I've thought for some time that community pharmacy particularly, we need to find a way to bring the business back into it for owners and sort of reinvigorate them and all the rest of it. So we'll come on, I know it's tough times and we'll come on to some of that, but suppose straight off the bat, like what is it that you observe in pharmacy that you like? What are the opportunities? And I suppose as a non-pharmacist, without getting yourself into trouble, what do pharmacists and owners need to know from a non-pharmacist?
Again, Johnny, lots in there, isn't there?
I
As to
know.
what do I observe? And I think it is, you know, as much as it's a bit of a distant memory now of when I was in retail, I came from a background of driving, really, really driving business, especially in value retail as it was then. And back then it was sort of Matalan pound stretcher days of stack it high, sell it cheap. And coming into pharmacy, it was almost a very, it was a big shock to the system of it operates very differently. I'm always going to mention my one big thing because I came from retail is a shock for me coming into pharmacy was the lack of attention when it came to the sort of what was presented in your front shop. And as I've gone along the years, I could probably say I can understand that a little bit more because, you know, the fundamental part of pharmacy is to provide community with medication and services that means that they're kept in good health or in as best health as they can. But I do still think there's opportunities in what you do and what patients see, because they don't see what happens behind the scenes. And having a well-presented sort of front shop area, as I would call it, is I still think is important. I think it's less important, but there's ways and means you can work it around. So from a retail side, it is a small part, but it's still something that I think has got potential. Pharmacy services is from a business perspective, and you know, I'm going to try today to not be all doom and gloom around the way pharmacy is, but I think there is a widely changing marketplace that things are not as great. And putting a disclaimer, I guess, in places, I'm operating in Scotland, and you know, it's a well-publicized topic that I always talk about our colleagues in England, and they've gone through this challenge, as we'll put it, for quite some time around the pressures that they've seen and continue to see. And now Scotland are starting to see those pressures around rising generics, utility costs going up, minimum wage going up, and to some degree, maybe not being reimbursed the way that we should be for the services we do. And as a quick side point, I tend to go off on tangents, so forgive me in advance. But as a quick side point, one massive thing I struggled with coming into pharmacy was I've operated in an industry prior to this whereby if you didn't make a profit on something, it didn't happen. So you wouldn't sell an item of clothing at a loss because that's not how you do things. And in pharmacy, on a day-to-day basis, we've got contractors that are they're dispensing something at a loss because they want to make sure the patient gets what they need in medication. I
Crazy.
still can't get my head around it, and I'll never be able. I can from a patient side because we're there to make sure patients get what they need, but it's a struggle for somebody that isn't sort of left school and come into that industry and never known anything else. So I think a combination of those has seen some new pressures, certainly in Scotland, that we need to relook at and decide how we best progress forward. And I think pharmacy services that are not NHS services have got potential, but I think we've got pharmacy services, things like Pharmacy First, Pharmacy First Plus, even to smoking cessation, you know, as much as that's maybe not as popular as it used to be, it's still there. I think it's areas we could be focusing on to try and stem some of the additional costs that are coming in through other means. So, you know, there's lots that could be done. And whilst I'm going to try and not come across as disrespectful, I think in the world of pharmacy, we've got pharmacists that come into this industry and buy their pharmacy because they qualified as a pharmacist. And what you don't get in university is even a crash course on running your own business or management. And I think that can be a real challenge because you've got people that have qualified as a pharmacist, want to make a huge difference in a community, but have not really been given the skills to really know actually, you know, how do I go and drive this business? And tend to then go into the we're getting by with what services we've got. So you've got some that are brilliant at that, and you've got some that just maybe don't think that way. And that's entirely to each to their own. But for me coming in, certainly. I've enjoyed being able to, I guess, step out of the box of pharmacy and try and do things a little bit differently.
It's really interesting. I actually really agree with you. And I'm probably a bit unusual. Regular listeners will know I should probably declare that, I'll probably never own a pharmacy. We've kind of given up on that. My business portfolio was moving a different direction. I said to you before the call, we've separated our businesses out. So pharmacy and practice in 2023 is really going back to basics. It's a slow news organization now. There's a podcast. There's a, we'll do a bit of editorial, but it really is my eyes and ears on the pharmacy world. And I'm reinvigorated and looking forward to that. But we've got other stuff going on. So we've got pharmacyfeedback.co.uk. We've got pharmacyfinder.uk. I've got a separate things that I go on here at home. Now, the thing that I completely agree with you on, and I think I learned it in retail as well, because I used to work for Boots. Now, for all their faults, you got to say, the one thing Boots do really well, or when I worked for them, was retail. I mean, the planning, the engagement, the execution around their trade plans. You know, at Christmas time, they've got so many offers going. Well, they used to have so many offers going on in different stores, different store sizes, different business units, and they execute. And generally, I mean, there were little things, like a bit of cardboard didn't turn up or something, but generally, the logistics around that were absolutely amazing. The thing I learned at Boots is you can't sell a gap.
Very true.
And everything flows from that. But there is an immediate, the retail, I don't know if you got this when you were in retail, retail can be a bit addictive for people that like business like us, I think, Richard, because if you've got your gauntlet in your little pharmacy and you think really entrepreneurially and you think, right, I used to work in Tariff. So like, what do the people of Tariff really need? Mm-hmm. And you come up with like, I don't know, it's toothpaste or something, or there's a really, really awesome offer. And you think, right, hell this, I'm going to stick this on the gauntlet and try and make some money here. And you do it. And then you see the sales go up. And then you think, oh, what's the margin? And it goes. But my point is there's an immediacy to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like you, I don't want to upset anybody, especially pharmacy owners who are friends and colleagues. We're pharmacy and practices, friends of the masses. But we are in a lazy economy. There's not enough, in my view, incentive to go through that startup business model. And by that I mean like I've done with my businesses, you've got to make an assumption, you've got to execute, and 99% of people in business don't execute. That's your best advantage. And then you'll hit a constraint. So what's the constraint? I don't know. For my websites, it might be a feature. I need a feature, I need to pay for it. We get over that constraint, we make more assumptions, we execute. And round we go. And it's constant. There's a constant evolution. And at the bottom of that, you need, because it's a business, you need to take money and make money. The question off the back of that big ramble is, do you agree for a start? That's the first one. But also, how do we get, if assuming you do agree, which I think you do, how do we get the pharmacy owners to move forward? Because I think the biggest constraint at the moment, well, there's multiple, actually, there's drug prices, there's all sorts of, you dispensing below tariff and all this crack. But the main constraint I see to say starting a suite of private pharmacy services, for example, is workforce. Over to you. Do you agree with all that?
Yeah, do you know what I do, Johnny? And I think, like you said, I think the biggest constraint is going to be there for a while is workforce. And that's moved from just being pharmacists to even skilled workers have been able to bring people in that that can be working in the dispensary, for argument's sake, or working as a counter assistant. And I've always again been amazed by the sort of guess where counter assistants and the responsibility that they have within a pharmacy role is very different to what it is working on a checkout in Tesco. And there's a lot of responsibility that goes unnoticed, but finding the right people for that and finding people that want to do that is a current challenge. So it's moving across the board of every aspect of the role, which then in turn means how does a pharmacy owner or even, you know, let's look at where I am, Wright Medicine, 35 pharmacies, we've got a team of people, we've got a support team. We're not just talking that it's within the pharmacies, we've got a team of support people that can then support the teams to launch those services. And even we're still at a struggle as to we can't find the time. It's treading water and sometimes falling into the realms of drowning because you're trying to deal with the daily sort of workload with the people that you've got. So I think if we can get past that and find a way of either, you know, the workforce situation and pressures eases a little bit to allow that, or allowing pharmacy owners that want that to have outside influence to possibly come into it and help launch those services is another. And there are companies out there that do that, that want to get involved in that. But it is a little bit chicken and egg. How do you need to solve parts of it to be able to get to that stage, but actually how do you solve that first part? Because it is a challenge. And then once you solve that first part, you're then just trying to catch up on all the stuff you've not managed to do. But ultimately, the only way that we're going to see new revenue coming through in terms of being able to, I guess, get the pharmacies in a better place is by, you know, looking at what services might be needed. And, you know, going back a little bit there, you were talking about toothpaste on the gondola end in Boots and Turriff. It's not too dissimilar to pharmacy services because, you know, you could be looking and saying, I think we should launch this new service. And I can't even think off the top of my head. We'll talk earwax removal service because it's quite a popular thing at the minute. And
yeah.
And you go, oh, well, we're going to do that in this pharmacy in Turriff. But actually, you know, there's two other people already doing it in the village. So it is very bespoke. It needs to be bespoke on what you do. So I think, you know, from our perspective at Wright Medicine, we look at things and we'll say, right, that local pharmacy would benefit from that local service rather than saying that service is going into all 35 pharmacies. So one size doesn't fit all on services. And, you know, if you can find a bit of a opportunity, seize the opportunity, because, you know, you're then stepping ahead and becoming better than possibly your local competitor.
Yeah, we've done loads of contracts in pharmacy and practice over the years, and some of the companies we engage with are really, really big. And I remember back in the early days when I wasn't even a limited company, or we didn't have a limited company, and one of the questions they'd ask is, like, you know, roughly where does your revenue come from? Is it one huge customer? Is it two fairly big customers? Or is it loads of little customers? And I'm not saying the NHS is a customer of community pharmacy, but at the minute, that chunk of money that's coming to meet the supply function is both really welcome,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually probably the Achilles heel. And I mean, I've been qualified 15, 16 years now, Richard, and we've been talking about this. So I do not want to go into the two pharmacist model. I do not want to go into supply and how we're moving on to services. We're beyond that. Mm. Because actually what's happening in the market, in my view, is that the action is starting to go elsewhere. And that's happening because the evolution of the internet and internet-based services, mm-hmm. turbocharged by COVID, to be honest, you know, and the agree? Yeah, like the acceptance of patients to do stuff online. I think there was a real step change there, do you?
There has been for a lot of things. I think there's still huge opportunity outside of that. But I think that you're spot on with what you're saying. There's been a huge shift during COVID that's seen things change altogether. And we could probably talk all day just on that subject of the things that things that maybe, you know, have presented new opportunities.
Here's a direct one for you. Is Pharmacy First Plus the cheapest out of ours clinical service on the planet?
Listen, without a doubt, I have this conversation very, very regular, mainly because I am so passionate about Pharmacy First Plus and what
Me
it
too.
Means to the community. And, you know, having used that service myself and been able to access it and see family members and friends that have been able to use it, it cannot be questioned that it's the cheapest form for the overall setup that can be used. There's so much. I mean, again, we could probably spend a whole podcast just on Pharmacy First Plus around the changes that it makes. The, you know, the difference for the community is the main one, because why wait 2 weeks for a GP appointment when you can go into your pharmacy? And interestingly, this week alone we were chatting, and before this week I would have said you could instantly walk into your pharmacy and be seen by somebody that operates that if there's an IP on site. And actually what I've heard this week is that that's starting to change. And actually there's in some pockets of areas you're having to wait a bit longer for that. So that tells you how valuable it is that it's become a service that is used so much, or is now being seen by the community, that we're starting to see that we can't be instant on that. But, you know, I don't know what the current figures are, Johnny. I know they were banded around a visit to your pharmacy costs 60 quid, visit to your GP is a minimum of 120 odd quid, and then it goes on and up from there. So yeah, a long way of saying, absolutely, it is the most cost effective way to get healthcare and be treated.
Cost effective, but my ponderings around that is who's taking the cost. I would say it's the network at the moment, because of how popular it is. In assuming the initial iteration of the service remains, I suppose what I was keen to do is like workshop that a bit. So like going back to our, because we're businessy folk. So like, if that was a startup, well, it is a startup really within the community pharmacy network. Like, what constraints do you see? And also, you know, if we had, let's say across the pharmacy network, if we had, I don't know, 5-10 million to invest in, no, well, actually, I think it needs about 50 million. If we'd 50 million to invest in that service to make it an all singing, all dancing thing, what would you do next? What constraints do you see in front of you right now as a business owner? Not so much, it could be clinical if you want, but like, how do you get that to move forward? What's the hard stuff you need to get over?
Do you know, it's going to sound, I guess, like we're going to keep coming back to this, but I think the biggest constraints at the minute is time and ability to, you know, to really drive that service forward. And I know we're not going to get into it, because we said this right at the start, that we're not going to get into the sort of two pharmacist model and everything else. But if you take the current constraints, the big constraint is, I guess the first one is that this service is only new, and it is at a starting point, and it's been based on absolutely what has been thought by Community Pharmacy Scotland, Scottish Government, as a starting point. Here's where we see it, and it's gathered pace. There is a lot of investment in new independent prescribers to be able to do the service. But I think currently you've got a lot of independent, those that are providing the service are also the responsible pharmacists for the day. So to sit and be tied up in a clinic all day, undertaking, you know, whatever consultations come in, is then impacting the workload that's still there to meet them whenever they've got time. So I think, you know, I'm not a pharmacist, so it's hard for me to say, but I think I would feel the pressure a little bit, because if I've tied up in 2 hours of consultations and then walking back to the dispensary and saying, actually, do you know what, there's the work that's piled up, that's a challenge. So in terms of the investment that, you know, that if we had that golden 50 million to put into it, it would be looking at how you better do that service within the pharmacy. And it's got to stay within the pharmacy. I think there was, you know, I'd heard somebody talk about, oh, well, maybe there's other weird and wonderful ways of working this. No, it needs to be in the pharmacy. It needs to be in the pharmacy setting that you know, that they come in and they see us as it's described, pharmacy first.
I agree. I agree it has to be in the pharmacy. Like, I don't I'm not being sort of Neolithic in my thinking. I think people want to speak to people. I think the big thing about community pharmacy is that you can reach all sections of the community, regardless of demographics, wealth, background. I guess location is based near to the pharmacies, but the way the contracts are doled out means there's universal coverage. So we should really use that. There is a cost to that, but I think it's a cost worth pitching to the government. And so far they're going with it, which is absolutely brilliant. I really agree with, it's not much crack for the listeners probably, because we're probably agreeing too much. But I agree that, well, one of the observations I've had about Pharmacy First Plus, just because I supported it, like in pharmacy practice and all the rest of it, I thought and think it's absolutely brilliant, and it's where we need to go. You were talking about how it works in practice and how stressful it can be. Well, back, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago now, when I qualified as an IP, I was doing similar in community pharmacy. So I was risk assessing asthmatic patients and, you know, handing them over carefully to the GP. So I know how it feels. I think being a pharmacist, community pharmacy manager is one of the toughest jobs out there, actually.
Mm-hmm.
To add prescribing into that, even if you've got a second pharmacist support, is a lot. One of the things, like, do you think we need more criticism about it? Because one of my sort of friendly observations recently is that we're starting to get sort of, as you say, there's no way that cannot be challenging practicing in that way. And that's okay. To me, that's just another constraint in our startup sort of way of thinking. But have you got any criticisms on it? And, you know, I know we don't upset folk and all the rest of it, but we'll never sort of move forward unless we sort of discuss these things and, air them.
Mulling that one over, Johnny, I can't say that I could put criticisms. I mean, listening to what other people have said, and this is not a personal opinion, this is more listening to what people have said. The current, current model for Pharmacy First Plus is that you receive a monthly payment to provide the service. Doesn't matter whether you provide one consultation or 1,000 consultations. So, you know, Joe Bloggs Pharmacy could be doing one consultation a week, and two doors down, there's another pharmacy that's doing 100, and everybody's getting paid the same sort of fee to do that. So is that a criticism? It could be. I'm not sure I agree with it, because I think you are on hand to be able to provide that service, which is what is needed currently. I really don't think I could criticize it. I think that, like we said quite early on, it's a model that has come into play. It's a model that needs to be developed and is well known, you know, in terms of those that are looking at this, that they want to develop it and make it better and take it forward. But in its current format, where we are just now, I feel it's serving its purpose without criticism, because we're making a difference. I could go on. I mean, I could go into the, you know, could I criticize it and say, actually, we're taking a lot of workload off other healthcare professionals? And the answer is we are. And that could come into some people saying, oh, well, yeah, I do feel that could be a criticism. But we're making our difference. Because again, let's go back to this. You know, we're all in business. Anybody that owns a pharmacy is in business, and they're in business to make money. But actually, the weird and wonderful way of pharmacy is they're also there to make patients' life easier and to provide healthcare. You know, so if a retailer doesn't make money, a retailer closes down. They're there to make money solely. They're not there to be pleased at the fact that they've just provided Johnny Laird with a new pair of Farislax. But pharmacy is very different. They're there to make a difference in a community and make sure people get the healthcare they need. So Pharmacy First Plus being available is great. So no, you know, long way again of saying I can't criticize it, because I think it's a great service.
I can't either. I can't criticize the concept of it, the idea of it, but I think the execution and rollout of it will hopefully evolve.
It's got to.
It has to. I think we need to position it that, maybe I need to speak to Harry and Matt again, but I think we're right at the start of a very, very, very long journey. I suppose you're coming at it from a business point of view, but from a pharmacist point of view, some of the things, and I am back in practice now, so some of the things like not concerns, but considerations that need to be developed and worked on and consistently deployed across the network. Because that's a big thing in Scotland. The contract is for everyone, for every pharmacy owner.
Mm-hmm.
So the performance across the piece, I suppose it would be good if there were as many early adopters as there were laggards in the deployment of these things. So that needs to be said. I think things that come up clinically for me are access to records.
Yes.
I think there is risk around that. I think there's risk around how are patients handled, how are they safety netted after they're seen. Easy example, if you came into my clinic at 10 o'clock in the morning and no, let's say another one. So if you went to your doctor in the morning and he chose to do a consultation and didn't prescribe, but safety netted you. So let's say it's for a chest infection. Come back and see me if you get XXX symptoms. That's safety netting. You're not happy with that. You know there's a Pharmacy First Plus down the road. You walk down the road and see the pharmacist. Pharmacist assesses off the street and decides to treat with amoxicillin.
Mm-hmm.
Safety nets. Off we go. So it's that joined up communication's a problem. Or a consideration. Sorry, it's not a problem. It's just a consideration. And this is quite clinical, but I actually think the clinical area is quite risky. Maybe I need to speak to some GPs, but and I don't wish to come across as negative. It's all caged in this, like we're right at the start of the journey, you know. But when I was practicing as a prescriber in the clinic, if you were dealing with someone who had asthma for years, the diagnosis was well established.
Mm-hmm.
It was really an optimization piece, even picking up the high-risk asthmatics in community who weren't being treated. I mean, that I was really going to be pretty unlucky if I didn't do some good, even if all I did was get them back in the system. So on the day, walking off the street patients without access to the records, it could be argued. I know you're not clinical, Richard, so that is my opinion.
No, and I think you know, as a non-clinical based and non-pharmacist, I think when you look at that, you would have to say yes, there is a risk there. But you know, records is important. I think having access to records is important.
Totally agree.
Equally, as a professional. And as a prescriber, as you are, if you make a decision on the day that says that in your professional opinion, that's what you believe is needed, at least you've got that to stand up to. And yeah, maybe a GP that morning has said no, but would that be any different to a patient going in and seeing a GP this morning and going in and seeing a different GP this afternoon who says, no, I think this is what we should do? Because we see this. We see GPs that will make different decisions. We will see different... independent prescribers make different decisions, and even down to Pharmacy First. You know, Pharmacy First as our sort of standard service. You know, I could walk in today and say this is what I'm feeling, and the pharmacist says, right, okay, we're going to give you this. I could walk into the pharmacy further down the road 2 minutes later, and they say, oh no, I think this is what you should get. So, I think that's going to be there. I think having patient records is important because it allows a little bit of I guess sense check. It allows a little bit of being able to sort of look at that, but it maybe is next step. Will it come is the question, because you know it's been talked around for so long and hasn't happened. So is it going to happen? Mm-hmm. But it should.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, it is all sort of wrapped around positivity around the whole thing. You know, I'm not being negative. I'm just trying to open up the conversation. I don't want to dismiss. Like, you're always in danger if you have an opinion, you dismiss work that's already been done.
Risk assessment, though, isn't it, Johnny? It's
like
anything in business, in anything, you should be looking at what the sort of risks are or what things need to be looked at. And I'm quite sure, you know, I'm not qualified enough to say it, but I'm quite sure that when Pharmacy First Plus was launched, this will have been a consideration and all these things are, but maybe it's the balance of risk of going, actually, we're going to provide a great service and eventually, you know, this next stage will come. Maybe we do need to have that. Maybe we need a sort of four-way podcast with Harry and Matt to be able to have that discussion. But they're valid points. What you make is valid points.
So that's Pharmacy First. That's your business background. What's your personal ambition, Richard?
Well, there's a question and a half, Johnny. Do you know, only very recently I've kind of reflected a little bit more than I have done because, you know, again, 13 years ago, I came in as a pretty much wet behind the ears guy that knew a little bit about pharmacy, but didn't know a huge amount. I could never imagine that sort of 13 years down the line, I would be, you know, looking after the day-to-day operations of Wright Medicine Pharmacy with 35 pharmacies, managing director of Edinpharm, a membership organization that negotiate pricing for just over 200 members across Scotland and Northern Ireland. And then if that wasn't enough, you know, I'm doing a bit of plugging for myself here, but
go on, Ed.
I launched a sideline consultancy business just before COVID and did it because I felt that there was areas I could hopefully make a difference. And that's done well, but you know, one of the big outcomes to that is, you know, being able to follow through with my passion of bringing a trade show or pharmacy show style to Scotland, which I did in 2022, and we're launching again in 2023. So you know, whilst personal ambition, what is it? You know, it's pretty unknown because I'm just going. I am honestly going with the flow. There is no 5-year plan. There is no this is what I want to achieve, and once I've achieved this, I'm going to retire. It is literally ideas come to me and I think, I wonder if I could do that. And then, you know, currently I've got a business partner that is more than happy to listen to my weird and wonderful ideas and go, let's go with it. So, you know, I want to keep going, but I think the ultimate for me and all the things I do, sadly, maybe, is it's all around making a difference. And, you know, making that difference, whether that be day to day with making the customer journey or the patient journey better, or whether it's making things easier for contractors and pharmacy sort of workforce, you know, via the trade show. So I just want to keep going. I just want to keep going with new ideas, and some will work and some won't. And then maybe we'll come to a stage in 20 or so years time where I can retire, but it's not looking likely just now.
I think your trade show is a great idea in Scotland. I think what's happened in a lot of markets is that there's been, and we discussed this a little bit before the podcast, so what's happened is there's been a lot of centralization. And this is kind of a bit ironic because we've just changed the pharmacy practice domain to a UK-based domain rather than just Scotland, although we'll always be based, you know, my heart will lie in Scotland, but based on the projects we're doing, we have to go a bit wider, which is progression for us. However, I think there's been centralization, hasn't there? And that the internet has facilitated that. And it's all, you know, it all becomes a bit samey. I think regular listeners will know what I'm talking about in terms of various trade shows and so on and so forth. So on a positive note, I think the intention to work that Scottish niche is a very clever one.
On the Scottish trade show side, to give a bit of background and reason for it, because people do ask this, and you know, again, going back to why we do things, there are alternatives. I'll not mention the alternatives because, you know, somebody said to me just after our first trade show, they said, "Oh, are you going to take on that other show?" And I said, No, absolutely. Like, there's no question over whether or not, you know, that particular en masse show that takes place in the UK is one that we could compete with. We can't compete with that. We're not aiming for that. We wanted to bring something to Scotland because especially when we go back to the sort of pressures and people getting away for a few days to take time out of the business to go along to these other events. I wanted to do it so that somebody, you know, that could leave their pharmacy for the day, come along, see some hopefully worthwhile exhibitors, and then be able to go back without the sort of added pressure in their mind of going, I can't be away from my pharmacy for that long. And as long as we achieve that, and as long as that's there, it brings something to Scotland, and, you know, maybe other places to come in future years. But Scotland's where, for me, it primarily lies of being able to do something that's localized a little bit more. You know, you talk centralized, it has its purpose because it's got to do. But localized is something that's really important to me, of making sure that you're keeping it relevant. And I could go on a bit of a tangent around, you know, some of the bigger other stuff that I've worked on in terms of, you know, pharmacy tech. I'm gonna be careful how I word these because I don't want to name names because it would be unfair. But
no, do go on ahead.
Well, there's a lot of focus on, for argument's sake, prescription reordering apps is one. And, you know, the talk is all about, okay, you know, EPS in England and this is how it works. And you're like, that's great. Yeah. Scotland doesn't have EPS. So, you know, these bigger companies, they focus very much on the wider UK market rather than what does Scotland want? What is it, you know, what is it that Northern Ireland want? What is it that Wales want? Because we all operate very different healthcare services and different contracts. So, you know, if we can start to bring more of that, and I'm, you know, this is me maybe putting a bit of a plea out to these companies in some respect, if they do listen, don't focus on a UK product, focus on a localized product, because that will gain a whole lot more for people. You know, in terms of what we're doing with the trade show, it's Scotland only. You know, we could do a Northern Ireland only, we could do a Wales only, but, you know, take that to the bigger degree and go, okay, what, with your pharmacy, with your PMR, you want something that is very much relevant to the Scottish market, pharmacy first plus, does your computer integrate as well? And, you know, maybe a little bit more of that and focusing on sort of pockets or devolved nations is the way to go. But again, you know, I keep saying this, we could probably have a whole podcast on that as well. You know, it's
I get what you're saying. I mean, you're what you're describing in business terms is working the niche, and that's absolutely brilliant. I think there's room for everyone, you know, and we can all work together. I mean, at the end of the day, if community pharmacy does well, we all do well, don't we? And that's what we all need to keep in mind when we're being sort of, I don't wish to come across that we've been critical at all. I don't think folk would think that, because it's a balanced conversation. But basically, we're all heading the same way. And if, as I say, if community pharmacy does well, then it's interesting. But we're doing the same with pharmacy in practice. So like the publication, you know, as I said earlier, we've separated the elements out, and it's quite refreshing for me not to have to shove everything I do through the brand pharmacy in practice. Just go back, and our niche in that market has become really obvious. So it's not mass market, it's slow news and comment, and it's balanced discussions with experts in the field specific to pharmacy. I used to, you know, embarrassingly looking back on it, I used to have to chase website hits for, you know, when we had more ads on the website. And that really, you know, you sort of go into that with integrity and you think, no, I'm not gonna. But then editorially you do think, crikey, I need to get the website hits up a bit, you know. And moving away from that for me personally is just such a relief. Mm-hmm. Because we can slow down, we can chat to folk who are experts in the field. There's not this outrage cycle. You know what I mean by that, Richard? I know you've seen it in various sectors of pharmacy where there's this like snowball of outrage, and then you get a headline, get loads of traffic, loads of comments, and then you get a follow-up headline, loads of comments, and it's just outrage and it goes nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that benefit are the people that are selling ads. So we're moving away from that to a degree. I think you're doing the same with your trade show. And I wish you all the best with it. I think it's great, and I'd love to come. Finally, because we've been blethering for ages, people, you over the last year or so, well, 2022, you have facilitated my mid pharmacist midlife crisis. So I've mentioned this before, but I was out of practice for about, I don't know, 4 years or something. I can't remember, whatever. I got like a little beep last year about this time, and it's Stevenson on the WhatsApp. oh, how you doing? Da, 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 da. But anyway, since then I've done quite a few locums for you. Absolutely fascinating. Really enjoyed it. But I wanted to talk about your people for a bit, if that's all right, just to finish. Because I'm kind of an unusual locum because I don't do very much of it, and it really is me. I mean, I like the money, don't get me wrong, but who doesn't? But it's really, really primarily to help me keep in touch.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked for you and a number of other companies as well. But Right Medicine, the culture is really nice.
Thanks.
Yeah. I can't think of a question around your people, but tell me about the culture that you know around your people and how important they are, because I see the consequences of it, and it's really positive.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult to structure a question, I guess, because you know, the culture that we attempt to build is one that you know I would hope many strive towards. And I'm gonna start with a bit of a disclaimer. And I do this quite a lot because I think it's important. There's no point me sitting here sort of bumming and blowing about how brilliant the culture is at Right Medicine and the way that we try and do it, because we're not perfect. We're far from perfect. We're on a journey of working out how best to support the people that come to work for us, and how best we can maintain that, you know, because I think in an ever-changing industry and an ever-changing world, the sort of turnover of our people is more than we would like it to be. And because of that, there's been a bit of a shift towards, okay, well, these new people are coming in, so we're gonna spend time trying to train them up and get them to where they need to be. And in some cases, I've forgotten about the people that have been there for the last 20 years. And, you know, that was a realization for me probably six-ish months ago, 9 months ago, where I sort of sat down and went, you know, we need to get back to focusing on those people that have stuck through a particularly difficult 2-3 years, whilst also still supporting those coming into the business. Because it's a really weird balance, Johnny, of people come in that have got no experience and you've got to train them from scratch. And then you've got the people that have been there for years that need retraining because they've gone into a few bad habits or, you know, the way they do things. And then you've got people that are quietly confident in what they do. And there's a risk there that you forget them because they just get on with their job and do a good job.
Yeah.
You don't see much. And then you think, well, why should they miss out? So, you know, we're still working hard on that culture. Of making sure that the people that are with us and people that work for us are listened to, they are trained to an appropriate level, and that takes time in this current market because it's not as easy to spend. We've invested in different people that will support that so that it doesn't all fall to the pharmacies. But in terms of the people we have, and you know, you've worked alongside some of these teams up in sort of Grampian Highland areas. The people that we've got in the business are exceptional. And I'm sure, you know, if you spoke to any other contractor would say the same about their team, but I never tire of being the person that says that we've got exceptional teams. We've got very committed people. And I often use this term with when talking to people, we've got a reasonable group of people that if you were to cut them in half, what you would find on cutting them in half is the logo of Right Medicine Pharmacy inside them. And that you can't ask for any more because they're so committed to Right Medicine, to the community, to what they do. And like I said, you couldn't ask for anything better. You get people that come and go. you get people that come in and they'll do a year. They might do 6 months. They might do 2 years, 3 years. The shelf life almost of working in community pharmacy has got shorter. And it's our job overall, not just in Right Medicine, everywhere, is to try and keep them interested and try and keep them motivated to stay within pharmacy and sort of, I guess, continue to build it out, because there's loads of good things. Good things you can do, and there's loads of things that are not so good. But you know, it's 50-50.
I was doing a mental sort of journey on my motorbike in my head of all the shops I've been to, and I was thinking, like, you know, in Aberharder, you've got well, across the place, you've got awesome colleagues, but you know, like Emma in Aberharder,
mm-hmm.
you've got, when you go up to Bucky, you've got Adele, you've got Alex in Normark. I mean, what a great pharmacist she is. You've got Sandra Robertson. I mean, she's the experience that woman brings to the role of Pharmacy First Plus. If anybody, well, with your permission, of course, wants to see clinically how it could be done, get yourself up there.
Just to add to that, Sandra is also the comedian of pharmacy, is what I always what I regard her. She's not just
well,
a
there's only one Sandra,
a comedian,
yeah.
But she is, and she's got such a wealth of experience from primary care and community. She's gone community, primary care, back to community.
Yeah.
All she wants to do is sort of make a difference in pharmacy. So yeah, mm. You know what? She is someone that people could really take a lot from.
Yeah. And I was thinking of, I've been over to Sky working in your branches over there, and there's Fiona and the team, and Kyle. Honestly, as I said it earlier, we've sort of given up on the idea of ever owning a pharmacy, but if I did, that Kyle of Lacalle shop would definitely be it. Then there's Broadford, great team there, Jill, etc. And then finally, I don't think I've worked anywhere else, Bucky, Normack, Taylor. Buckpool, Rebecca at Buckpool as well. Excellent. And then finally, of course, Ali and Donna and the team in Wick. I would say, if I may, most improved of the people, of the teams that I've worked with. The difference between when I went there last year and this year is quite a lot of the teams developing really well. And I mean, Ali's been dining out on that employee of the month for about a year now.
Yeah. You know, it's a good point you make around, you know, Ali as an example. I use him as often as an example, because, you know, when we talk about the challenges we face in workforce and getting good people in, Ali came to us as a completely fresh out of the box, never worked in pharmacy, reasonably sketchy background of sort of working in various places, and came in and very, very quickly was able to show that you were getting somebody there, somebody that would just wanted to learn and wanted to progress. And you're spot on with what you say. You know, compared to last year, he was good. This year, you know, 2022 into 2023, he has found his own and some, and is now, you know, he's looking after the two pharmacies we have in Wick, and overseeing things, because he's reached such a level of motivation and enthusiasm that I wish I could replicate in some other areas, because he's brilliant. But he's one of a number of examples of people that have come in, and you could almost claim that's been working in pharmacy for years upon years because of the way
they've
taken it on. And having those guys in place, you can't go wrong. As I say, he's not a standout example, because there's tons of them, but he's a great example of somebody that's really taken it on and gone, I'm just going to get on with it, and I'm going to make things good. So he's brilliant.
He's a joy to work, and so is Donna. I mean, Donna, you know, Donna makes him look good, and I don't forget that. Right, I'm conscious we're talking about folk that the listeners have no idea who they are, but basically this guy Ali, he's been, I think he's only been in pharmacy circles for a year or two, hasn't he?
2020, he came in during COVID, so he's still very new to pharmacy.
He honestly, that guy, right? The pharmacy could be on fire, and he would still find a positive thing to say. He is the most positive guy I've ever worked with, and not in a, I don't know, not in a stupid way. He's mm-hmm. it's it is just generally sees the best in people. And
he does.
Anyway, I've really enjoyed it. And listen, really enjoyed speaking to you, Richard, as well. Now, I haven't run this question past you, and it is quite a tricky one, so you might want to answer it in the comments. How about you answer it in the comments on LinkedIn or something like that? But I'm going to ask everyone this year for the next wee while as the final question, what topic or what area are we not talking about in pharmacy that we should be? So maybe leave that to the comments.
It's one to think about, is that one?
One to think about. It's a bit hard on the spot. You need to think around it because we've talked a lot about what's happening at the moment. So, but listen, you've been incredibly generous with your time. Thank you ever so much. Hope you've enjoyed the chat. Quite relaxed as usual. And I'll see you again soon, hopefully.
Brilliant. Thanks, Johnny.